From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. We live in an increasingly globalized world, connected by digital communication and more aware than ever of the rest of humanity. But maybe our current world order is not so different from what went before. In a sweeping new book, acclaimed writer Tamim Ansari attempts to make sense of human history through our understanding of one another and ourselves. He points out that seemingly disconnected historical events were in fact linked to one another, and that today, although we may be more connected than ever, we're also limited by our worldviews and remain siloed by religion, culture, geography, and more. Tamim Ansari is the author of West of Kabul, East of New York, Destiny Disrupted, and Games Without Rules. He joins me to discuss his ambitious new book, The Invention of Yesterday, a 50,000-year history of human culture, conflict, and connection. Welcome to the program, Tamim.
Yeah, thank you.
So I sort of struggled to summarize your book, and I think that's because the ideas are so big, but it seemed to me in a nutshell, we're all connected, and yet we are all remain different from one another or have different views from one another. I don't know if that's sort of a nutshell way of putting it, but what got you started along this line of thinking that led to this ambitious historical look at humanity?
Well, you know, if you have trouble putting this in a nutshell, so do I, actually. It is a big book, and it has a lot in it. And I've been moving towards the ideas I put here for probably at least 20 or 30 years. So you're right. One of the things that I'm interested in is interconnectedness and the fact that there's so many ways in which interconnectedness goes unnoticed in accounts of history. That was one thing. But then there's the opposite of that. Yes, we're so interconnected, and yet what's obviously indisputable as well, we live in what is now called social bubbles. That phenomenon has endured through history, and it's maybe tighter at some times. It's more sort of loose and cloudy at other times. But we're always living in some world we're constructing with people that we are in interaction and communication with. And we're always constructing some idea of an outside world and an other, and we're in interaction with that, with those others. Now, that's not always that's not always violence and war. Trade is that kind of interaction with the other. Travelers do it. People as tourists go to an unknown location and they find out about the people. But this idea of us guys in here and all the rest of them out there has been something that has characterized human societies all through history.
So essentially just focusing on this history part of it and how we view ourselves within time, you point out that just as our ancestors may have looked to the stars and invented stories about constellations in the skies to reflect their experiences, we still have that today. Our history books tell a particular view of our past depending on who we are. We write our histories to reflect our biases.
That's one side of that. When I brought up this metaphor of constellations, one thing I was really interested in, what I was trying to convey with that phrase, is that a constellation isn't really there. You know, the stars, the individual stars are there, but this shape that's up there that we see, we're telling each other about that. And then because we're telling each other, then we see it and we're living with that as a reality. Now, there's so much in our social world that corresponds to that idea. You know, somebody was asking me the other day, about Brexit and Britain, and they were saying Britain doesn't want to be part of Europe. How do you explain that? And one thing that struck me is, well, Europe itself is a thing that exists because we think it exists. And actually, the same is true of Britain. You know, once people who say, I don't want to be part of Europe in Britain, might in a sense also be saying, I don't believe there's such a thing as Europe, because that very phrase implies that all these people living across this landscape are somehow one. They are a we the people. And that idea has broken down in some places. I think that idea is in trouble in a lot of places. You know, I think a lot of the stuff that's going on in America reflects a process of various people saying, the big world is too confusing. I want to just construct a little world with the people I know best and who look like me and talk like me.
And yet so, we have an impact. Our actions have an impact on other people greater than we would imagine, which is also part of what you write about.
Yes, we have an impact on other people, and often we have an impact that we don't see the results of what we're doing. You know, our actions have ripple effects, and some of what it does, it ripples out and it's felt in places, and we don't even see the consequences of what we do. I was struck many years ago, right after 9/11, you know, I went to Pakistan, and what I realized when I was there was that everybody in Pakistan knew about America and were conscious of it being something that existed in the world. And when I was in America, hardly anyone ever thought about Pakistan. You know, they didn't think about what might be there, who the people were.
And I should mention, you're from Afghanistan, right?
Yes, I'm from Afghanistan. And, you know, I'm from Afghanistan, but I have a particular perch on that fact, because my mother was the first American woman to marry an Afghan and live in Afghanistan as an Afghan. Hmm. So, you know, I was always, in some sense, a citizen or a participant in two worlds. And I was aware from the start that these were two very different worlds, and that even my identity would change depending on whether I was in this world or I was in that world. And it made me conscious that my identity was itself a social fact. You know, it's not something that just is like a grain of corn that's inside my body and it's just there. It's something that is part of all my connections with all the people that I'm interacting with. And I was conscious then that in the case of Afghanistan and America, there were two whole worlds here. One thing I think is that now it's not possible for anybody, or it's probably is possible for somebody, but for the most part, our information is not coming just locally. We are in an ocean of information that is probably forcing all of us to be aware of all the other worlds that are out there. And right now, I think we're having trouble making sense of that as one big whole, you know, one big whole, the gestalt. And that's the process we're going through right now, is to try to construct, I hope it is, and I think it is, I think we're going through a process of trying to construct a narrative of the world that is somehow inclusive of all of us, you know, and when we start to have experiences that go in this way, there's anxieties about losing our own identity in this big thing that's out there and is confusing. So I think that's one of the problems that we're confronting in the world today.
So this idea of interconnectedness is really critical when it comes to culture. And I would love for you to explore that a little bit, because when we think of culture in terms of, say, our food, our attire, our religions, our lack thereof, are the stories that we tell, they are, whether we want to admit it or not, influenced and impacted and shaped by other cultures and other peoples that we may just not have that capacity to have the long-term view of, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I don't have the book with me, so I can't give you the exact details, but I read a book about spices, and the guy was investigating, you know, where spices came from and where in history, how they spread. And he was a person whose ancestral roots were Nabataean, so he was, from the Arabian Peninsula. And he was aware of a dish that is very, common in Morocco, and very much the same spice ideas, the same kind of dish is found in a part of Mexico, and it's you know, it's somehow when all the European sort of travels into the Americas happened, this spice thing came along, and it, you know, it planted roots in the Americas, and it reemerged as a thing in itself, which people there have no idea has anything to do with something that's happening in Morocco. So that kind of thing is all over the place, you know.
And yet there are these notions going back to, for example, what you were saying about British people wanting to leave Europe. There are these notions of purity, of cultural purity, that are such human constructs, where we want to see ourselves as being, you know, for example, even take the French, who have this notion of what it means to be French, even though, of course, the French have influenced other countries and other countries have influenced French people far more and their culture far more than they'd like to admit.
Yes, there is something about, you know, this purity of culture thing is a two-sided sword. I think that, we have a tendency to think of our culture as a objective fact that exists in the universe. Actually, our culture is a cloud of ideas, emotions, history, and so on, which has no sharp edges. You can't say it is, you know, this idea is French and this one is German, and they're completely different. There are ideas that could be French, could be German, you know, so it's vague like that. I think the monkey wrench in the works is that, you know, there's power diversity in the world, so that when there is a cultural, mingling and new cultural ideas developing, it's often not the case that those are two equal cultures. You know, it's often the case that there is a conquering or dominant culture and a subdominant culture, and so that it infects the process of cultural mingling and new cultural forms arising. It's infected by the cultural imperialism sort of flavor there. So I think people, you know, there's people they embrace their culture and try to have a sense of purity because they want to differentiate themselves from this other, that the relationship is not one of equal power. So there's that. But on the other hand, it's a good thing when the same people, you know, when pepper comes from one place and then people use the same peppers and they, or even when stories mingle and you think of new stories, the mingling of cultures is a really good thing, I think. I heard once somebody use the phrase the anthropological present. I don't know if you're familiar with that word, but what that term means is there is an anthropologist's idea of what the authentic culture of a place is. And that view is the anthropological present is whatever the culture was when anthropologists first discovered it. And, you know, actually, all cultures are dynamic and in flux. When I go back to Afghanistan from, you know, after many years, I grew up there as a kid. I had Afghan culture was a certain way. And I go back there and, oh, yes, it's amazingly still the same and it's so familiar. But actually, the opposite is also true. You know, the Afghan diaspora that happened because of the wars with the Soviets and all that, Afghans went to all different places. They went to England. Came here. They went to Holland and other places. And after the 9/11 and the war with the Taliban and stuff, Afghans came back from a lot of places. And what it turns out is, you know, there are English Afghans. There is Dutch Afghans. There's American Afghans. Not that they're incompatible, but they're different. You know, they're bringing different flavors in. So
right. Yeah, I mean, we certainly see that in so many diasporic cultures from different parts of the world. So we share this interconnectedness, and yet we remain, convinced of our distinction. And I'm wondering if that's because of the sort of inability of the human mind to take in the vastness of history.
It is related to the inability of the human mind to take in the vastness of history, but that's partly because it's very difficult for us to you know, operate and live in a conceptual environment that is not coherent.
We need coherent stories about ourselves.
Right. And our stories can't be contradicting each other all the time. If they do, we tend to start to say, well, one of these stories is not right then, and we blank it out. So we need coherence. Now, it's very hard for us to have coherence about the whole history of the world because we do live as different cultures, and those different cultures are not just right now. They are the embodiment of a process that goes deep into the past. They're a chapter in some story that's already in progress. And there's lots of these stories already in progress. I'm just saying, this is kind of what my book is proposing. I'm saying that there has always been and there is now a one big story of humanity that's also in progress. We don't have the framework to be able to think of ourselves in a very sort of effective way as one whole humanity. But we're going there and we have to go there because for the first time in history, we are confronting challenges out of the environment and out of the cosmos that are challenges for not this or that group of people, but for all people.
So they're global challenges like climate change, for example.
Well, climate change is certainly the most obvious one of those. Yes, climate change is like that. I would just toss into the mix. There is no going back from the fact that the economy of the world is completely interconnected. You know, that's not going to stop. That's going to continue to happen. And then there is the political fact that the world is divided into a lot of political states, you know, and they are sovereign and they keep separate. So the globalization of the economy and the organization politically of the world into these non-overlapping states, there's a tension there. You know, there is no government. Our economy is globalized and we have nothing like, the possibility of a global government. So there's some strains there that's showing now.
I want to ask you to extend your historical view to the future where we, for example, if the digital revolution continues, we are more interconnected digitally than ever before. The capacity for peer-to-peer communication is unlike anything we've had in human history, right? I mean, I could be following the Instagram account of a young woman in Tehran who does ceramics and learn, you know what I mean? We have this capacity to communicate with one another and see what one another are doing to a greater extent than ever before. Now, of course, we may still not be reaching, say, the poorest of the poor in sub-Saharan Africa who may not have access to the internet or rural India, but it's improving every day.
Well, it's true that we can access information from pretty much every part of the world. This is true. And we can have peer-to-peer interaction with someone anywhere. This is true. What we can't have is interaction with everyone everywhere. You know, it's like we're not able to do that yet. What we have as human beings, just biologically, is we have a bandwidth problem, you know, so to speak. Only so much information can come into the human brain in a simultaneous fashion. And as humans, in order to be able to incorporate more information that's coming at us from out there, we have to package it and turn it into some single whole that we can then, handle as a unit. And every time we do that, we create an abstraction. And every time we create an abstraction, we lose some contact with the visceral reality that is what's happening in another place. I remember I saw something that said, Iraq, they have hard rock bands now. So this is great. Now Americans and Iraqis can understand each other. And what struck me was that, you know, I think that's great that, you know, there's the music is spreading and we have some, although again there, you know, they have rock music, but we don't have Iraqi music. So there's that. but I think it's also the case that for a person living in, you know, war shattered Iraq and that, and there's a rock band, that's part of a single whole experience that person is having. And the meaning of that music might be different for that person, you know, so that what we haven't been able to get is we don't know that person's whole context and that person doesn't know, you know, my whole context. I know this is sounding a little sort of, oh, despairing, we're never going to get through this, but I do wonder if the ultimate digital, you know, the ultimate reality about the digital revolution is that there is a sort of a consciousness that's developing that's outside of our ability to even see it, because we are just cells in the brain that's forming, if you see what I mean.
Right. So finally, in terms of how we view ourselves and one another, does a history book like yours allow us to start mapping a different kind of narrative?
I certainly hope so, and I think so. And in regards to that, what I would say is, you know, my book is an attempt to, you know, to tell a story that I think is the story of the world. You know, I'm looking for how to wrap my arms around the whole thing. I do not think of this as the end of the conversation. I like to think of this as the start of the conversation. I'm saying, let's start to try to figure out what that whole story is. And if we can construct that whole story and be communicating with it, that's going to be good for us. That's going to add something, not everything, but something to our ability to confront the challenges that face all of humanity as a coordinated, you know, and self-conscious humanity.
And so in a nutshell, we started out struggling with nutshells, but in a nutshell, we are all one.
Well, in a nutshell, yes, I think that is the case.
Well, thank you so much, Tamim Ansari, for spending this time with us. Really appreciate discussing your new book with you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye. My guest has been Tamim Ansari, the acclaimed and award-winning author of West of Kabul, East of New York, Destiny Disrupted, and Games Without Rules. We've been talking about his new book, The Invention of Yesterday, a 50,000-year history of human culture, conflict, and connection. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.